Not many of our guests we speak to here on the wireless have had the highs or the lows quite as strongly as my next guest, Jenny McCarthy. Morning, Jenny.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Now, I'm going to put it simply in one sentence and ask you to take it from the beginning, if you could. You lost everything, but now you're the happiest person you've ever been.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Take us away from the start.
I got on a plane at the age of 18 over to England, trained to be a nurse. Met my ex-husband, moved to York after 3 months of knowing him, had only ever wanted to be a guard, but I'm not even 5 foot. Carried on my nursing, cardiothoracic nursing, and then into trauma, and then managed to get into the police. So I was a nurse for 10 years, and then I became a police officer, rapid response police officer, for nearly 15 years in York.
Are you talking rapid response medically or rapid response use of force and guns, etc.?
Oh, yeah, like police, yeah. So I left the medicine on a Sunday and joined the police force on a Monday.
That's a fairly big change anyway. But still, your life is on the positive arc. You couldn't be a guard. You were too short. I think those criteria are abolished now. But you did manage to get in across the water then. And that's a big career change. But you're still on the upward arc.
Yeah. Well, I think when you're in trauma as well, when you're in A&E, you're kind of, with the patients you've got 4 hours, and you're dealing with trauma all the time. You're dealing with, you know, patients who are coming in with gunshot wounds or, you know, stab wounds, or their police are there. It's all high intensity. And 1 minute you're standing in front of a family telling them their loved one has passed away, to then trying to save somebody else's life. So kind of the transition from going from nursing into policing was pretty much there, because you're dealing with members of the public who are at their most vulnerable all the time.
You do, of course, get to give them some good news now and again, maybe not often.
Yes.
Not often. Yeah.
Yes, you do. You do.
So, your life was turned upside down.
Yeah, just like you think you have everything. I was married. I had two little girls. I was doing the job of my dreams. And my mum got diagnosed with terminal cancer the same week my dad got diagnosed with cancer. And thankfully, his was treatable. And in the meantime, I was flying back and forth from Ireland to Cork, just trying to spend as much time with my mum as I could. And unbeknownst to me, my ex-husband was having an affair. My mum passed away. And on the night she passed away, I obviously was urgently rushing back to Ireland to try and get to see her for one more time. And he chose not to come back, which I thought was very strange. But at the time, so much was going on. Got back to Ireland and buried my mum. 48 hours later, flew back to the UK to meet my ex-husband in Manchester, where he brought my two girls to meet me. It was a totally different person. I couldn't understand. All I wanted was a hug, and that was it. Like, I'd buried my mum. I was there on my own. Everybody had their, you know, respective partners, and you just want somebody to give you a hug and, you know, support. But that I got quite the opposite. So I flew back to Ireland with the girls for a week, came back again after a week, and it was just totally different. Now, prior to that, several months prior to that, I had been involved in an injury on duty, a collision at work, which ultimately prevented me from being out on front line. So I was restricted duty in the fourth control room, dealing with police matters, but obviously non-confrontational. And in the back, obviously in the background of that, they were looking at medically retiring me, even though I didn't want to. So this carried on. I am in the process, obviously, going through medical retirement. And then it all came to a head, and I asked him what was going on. And he actually never admitted it. He just said, you will never, you know, you wouldn't agree with it, black and white, whatever. So he left. And that was the start of an extremely acrimonious divorce. A short while later, I was medically retired.
What does that mean exactly?
It just means that I had no choice, that the injuries that I had sustained from the accident could no longer let me work as a frontline police officer.
Mm-hmm. And a desk job wasn't for you, or was it offered you?
No, it was the injuries that I had gotten. I was on working on 4 hours after the accident, so it was too expensive to keep me on.
Okay.
Yeah.
So just to clarify one other point, I just want to be clear. When you came back from burying your mum, he brought the other person with your girls to see you, did he?
No, I didn't know anything about her. My daughter, actually, my youngest daughter had already met her and told me in passing that she'd met daddy's girlfriend a couple of months beforehand. But I obviously took no notice of it because kids, you know, she was two or three at the time. But she had met her. Obviously, you know, there's stuff I can't talk about. There was stuff going on in the background. People did know, but unfortunately, they were bound. They couldn't tell me. So when it finally all did come out, to this day, he's never admitted it. The first time I met his new wife was probably about 6 months after he left.
Okay, but your trials didn't end there. You had a close friend died from breast cancer. What happened next?
Yeah, my colleague, Suzanne, she was amazing. She left behind two young boys, police officer that I worked with. And her funeral actually was at York Minster on the same day as my mum was getting buried, so I couldn't make it there. And obviously, when a police officer dies, you do a guard of honour, you wear your police suit, and it's quite an honour to wear it. And that picture, I asked him, my ex, to take a picture actually at the time, because I knew I would never get to wear that suit again. I knew my time was limited with the police, but I couldn't smile. I couldn't smile at all. And those who know me, I love laughing. No matter what's going on, I will always smile. But I couldn't smile. And I put a picture on my Instagram page, the Health and Wellbeing Advocate, of that picture from 8 years ago to a picture that I took outside the police station a few months ago. But that face, that is when I knew I was losing everything. I'd lost my mum, I'd lost my friend, my ex-husband.
Lost your job,
gone.
Your husband.
My job was, and little did I know, it was only about to get 1,000 times worse.
What happened next?
My 6 weeks after I got medically retired, my daughter came running into my room, jumped on the bed and landed on my chest, and I felt some lumps. And within 24 hours, I had been diagnosed with breast cancer.
How long was the treatment, the surgery, the recovery?
All in all, the initial part was over a year from surgery because it had spread, and then you have to have time for the scars to heal. And then I had 7 weeks of intensive radiotherapy, so you end up getting burns, etc. And then you have the knock-on effect, which is the sheer tiredness that nobody can comprehend until you experience radiotherapy tiredness. Then you're put on a 5-year survival plan and you're monitored, and I was monitored quite well. They were brilliant with me because I was a high risk. And then fast forward to 2 years ago, I ended up having to have more surgery, where I had my hysterectomy, everything had to come out because of the concern that it was coming back again.
And were you obviously a single mum at this stage? Were you trying to hold down a job, or how
yep,
did that...
I was, yep. Yeah, it was literally a couple of months after my mum passed away. I asked him to leave. I had taken him back because I do believe you have to give people a chance, but he carried on with the affair. So I asked him to leave. I started, when I found out the affair was going on and to the extent of it, I started divorce proceedings straight away. I was still policing, albeit I was in a control room on restricted duties. I went through the whole of the illness, the breast cancer treatment for the year on my own. He stopped seeing his children as soon as I was diagnosed. And then a year later, when I rang the bell, he started to see them again. But thankfully, I had an amazing support network around me of friends who I'd built up while I was in York. One of my brothers who was living down south in London, he came up with his family, and my sister, she was there with me as well, with her husband, who was alive at the time.
Okay, tell me the significance of ringing the bell. I know it's a huge, huge thing for people who don't know what that means.
Yeah, do you know, every single time I went in, like you're obviously in there every day, every time I would go in and wait for my treatment, and I experienced my 40th birthday in there ringing the bell. And, oh no, sorry, that was beforehand. But every time I would hear that bell ring, I'd start crying. And whoever would come with me on the day, we would cry, because you just don't know if you're ever going to get to ring that bell. Because when you get diagnosed with cancer, any type of cancer, it doesn't matter. I'm obviously on my own. I've got two little girls. The fear that I'm not going to be around for these girls to grow up. And these two children are my life, and I would do anything for them. So to get to the 7 weeks and to go through the burns, the sickness, all of that, I mean, that carries on. But to ring that bell was probably one of the most significant, one of the three most significant moments of my life. I was broken. When I rang that bell, I can safely say I was broken.
So you'd reached the lowest ebb of maybe your self-esteem, the bedrock of
everything,
your self-worth, your energy, mentally, fraught with worry about your two kids and the future. But ringing the bell, would you say that was, if you were at your weakest, was it also where your arc turned back to the upward?
Yeah, because I'd gotten through all of this on my own. There were days I remember being on the couch. I know I mentioned this in the article, the newspaper, where the children were at school and nursery, and I had no energy to get up and make a sandwich, and I was crying, I was bawling, but I was too proud to ring anybody. And I could have picked up the phone to anybody. Everybody was there to help me, but I was too proud to ask for help. And that is the one thing I wish, when I look back, that I had done, because I was a shell of myself. And
why would pride be a barrier to that?
I think because I've gone through so much, I didn't want to, and I still am to an extent even now, I don't like to bother people. And because when you're a single mum as well, I don't know, I feel almost like I have to try even harder, even though I don't have to prove myself to anybody. But, and I'm sure the single mums out there and the single dads and the single grandparents, everybody who hears me saying this, it's not that you need to prove anything to yourself, but you need, I want my kids to see that I can do this. You know, I'm not a perfect mum. I'll cry, I'll shout, you know, I have my bad days. I want to provide and give the best life for them. There'll be certain things they can't do because I'm doing it on my own. But there is a pride. There's an element of embarrassment, but there's also a larger element of pride.
Okay, embarrassment for what?
Because I'm a single mum and, you know, I've been on my own for a considerable amount of time. So when people say, God, how are you still single? It's like, because I choose to be. I don't want to be bringing different people in and out of my life. I want my girls to grow up knowing that, you know, you can do this. Now, don't get me wrong, I don't want them to grow up and hate men. I certainly don't hate men. I have gone on dates and I would go on dates, but I just want to get everything right by my girls. They went through so much when we were in the UK. And when I brought them back here, the decision to leave everything, a 25-year life in the UK, and move back to a village that we'd never been to, knew nobody, and set up a new life there, I had to do it. Because for my children to walk past their father every day, seeing him with another woman, with her kids, and not having any contact with them by his choice, not theirs, not mine. I couldn't go through it for them. It was heartbreaking. So the only way I could shield them was to bring them back here and start a new life in the hope that maybe one day, you know, he'll change his mind and make contact with them. And now they've flourished. They're the most amazing young ladies that you would ever come across.
Jenny, I'm conscious of time and the fact that I want to give balance to your story. And I don't think I can do that in the time remaining before news. Would you mind coming back to me after 11 o'clock news? We'll talk right up to it, but I just want to give the positive side of your story equal weight to the struggle of your story. So you've been very eloquent and very emotive, very heartfelt about what you've discussed. How old were the girls when you were going through all this over in the UK?
3 and 6.
That's a very impressionable age, set of ages, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And to be honest with you, like, the reason I'm coming out with my story now is because the amount of people that I see, the amount of friends or, you know, people that I talk to that are actually going through the same, where marriages are breaking down, children are, you know, they're being used as pawns. You know, there's women that are going through menopause. They don't realize what's going on. They feel like they're losing the plot, but they're not. and all of these things coming together, and I can see it happening. And I just thought, if I could just speak out and just let people know that they are normal, let the men know that their wives, partners, are normal, but they're going through a really tough time. Children are so impressionable. You know, they are resilient. And when people turn around and say, Ash, they're only kids, they'll be grand, they get over it. No, you have to do right by them. And that's why, from the start, my girls were my priority. There was no partners. I'd seen people move, you know, different guys in every 8 months, 12 months. And that was tearing the children apart. For me, the kids were my priority. I had to get things right with them. And then once I, you know, once they leave the nest and they go and they do what they want to do, I can then start my life off again.
It's an incredible story so far. There are men and women listening to this right now who will not have gone through or are going through a fraction of what you've described there, and are still probably feeling the same way you felt as you walked up to ring the bell, absolutely at the bottom and broken. And I'd like to discuss, as I said, the positive side of the story, because I think you've got a fabulous message to impart to our listeners today. For now, I'll ask you to wait 10 minutes or so. I appreciate everything you're doing. If that doesn't inconvenience you, Jenny, I'd love to talk to you again after news at 11. Is that okay?
You're absolutely fine. I'd love to. Thank you.
Thanks, Jenny.